Welcome to the Hockey Show on ESPN Chicago. The very latest news and analysis from the NHL and Chicagoland hockey. Presented by Four Winds Casino and brought to you in part by Nancy's Pizza and your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Now here are your hosts, Barstool Chief and Pat Boyle.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. We are presented by Four Winds Casino. Mike's side with Barstool Chief. I am Pat Boyle. Hawks hosting Colorado tonight at the United Center. A late puck drop in about 52 minutes. Chief, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. This show worked out perfectly. We're the pregame show. So a little late night hockey. Almost reminds April. Reminds you of those 8:30, 8:45 starts back when the Hawks used to be in the playoffs, 8:45 against Nashville.
I do remember those days. Yeah. Remember them fondly. And we're also on Ovechkin watch. He scored in Carolina. So he's now at 892, three away from breaking Wayne Gretzky's record. And they're heading to the third period. This is even more intriguing for the Blackhawks fans because if he gets another goal, he'll only be a two away, and the Hawks are at Washington on Friday night. So would you like to be a part of history, Chief, or is it inconsequential to you?
You know, I hadn't thought of it that way. I would probably say no. I don't want to be there for that. I don't want it to be done against my team. I remember watching Gretzky do it against Vancouver in like an afternoon game. You know, what year was that, 1994 or something? So it's like I still have that memory burned into my brain. So I don't think I'd want to see this replayed forever. And I this is one of those records that will probably stand for 20 years. So this at least. So this this highlight will be run over and over and over and over. So I could probably do without that.
Yeah, and remember, OV has some history against the Hawks. He got his 800th at the United Center. On a hat trick night. So
he's done it before.
He has done it before. So
that's again, not the history I thought you were going to bring up. I still hate him from hitting Brian Campbell from behind in 2010. I will never forgive him. He tried to steal a Stanley Cup from us that year.
That was a huge injury that ended up, you know, Campbell came back in that series against Nashville was a big reason why they turned that thing around. Hey, the Blackhawks rebuild took a major turn for me this week, Chief. After talking for, I don't know, a few years about this rebuild and all the players that have left Chicago, all the potential draft picks that could have come here that turned into Blackhawks prospects, yesterday at Fifth Third Arena after practice, I stood in there with 14 players, 23 and under. I mean, back in October and November, this was the fifth oldest locker room in the league. Now it's one of the youngest. And to me, the future of this franchise is beginning to come more and more in focus.
Yeah, I wrote a blog earlier this week that we've entered the future. We are living in the future because for the first time since this rebuild started, the clock counted the minute Brandon Hagel was traded in March of 22. So we've been marching towards this for 3 years. And now it does feel like where you have Renzel and Moore and Nazar and Bedard and all these guys that are, you know, Levchinov, the thinking is that this is the core that will hopefully deliver you back to the promised land and back to relevancy. So we're here now. So the rebuild obviously isn't over, but it is well underway. And it's like you can start envisioning a brighter future and watching Renzel, especially Renzel, on his debut on Sunday, it makes it feel a lot more plausible because, man, did he have some special moments.
Well, let's get into that debut from Renzel because, you know, we had heard how much of a major step he took at Minnesota this year. Again, he was taken in 2022 draft, 25th overall by the Hawks, and that was their third pick in that first round. And if you'll recall, there were a lot of teams that thought that that was a reach for the Blackhawks. And the Blackhawks admitted that Renzel was going to be in a longer development path. Well, you know, here we are 3 years later. And if you did that draft, even from the Blackhawks perspective, you'd probably be taking those players in different order.
Well, he's already ahead of Korchinski at this point.
Correct.
So, yeah. So Korchinski obviously went seventh. That was the DeBrincat trade. And then they traded back in because they didn't want to miss out on Sam Rinzell. And it was bold because he was a kid who had played Minnesota high school hockey, had done, you know, 1 year of the USHL, wasn't old enough to be eligible for college hockey. So he had to do another year in the USHL before eventually going with the Golden Gophers, and he's, you know, roommates there, at least for their first year at University of Minnesota with Bob Motzko. So, yeah, and it's sometimes it's just like you just got to trust your eyes and trust the tools because there aren't many players anywhere that can skate like that, let alone guys that are 6'5 that can skate like that. So when it's, you know, you watch a couple of shifts where he's out there with Vlasic, it's like, where are the forwards supposed to go with how big they are and what their reach is and their skating ability? There's no way to get past them in transition. It was like, this is a fortress here watching these guys skate.
He had that one shift, Chief, in the second period where he did the spin move. He had like four puck touches and two scoring chances, airmailed one over the crossbar. And I was like, he just looked like he belonged. And to that point, I had NHL insider Frank Cervalli, who we've had on the hockey show before. And I asked him in the pregame show before Rinzell and Moore made their debuts, I asked Cervalli what Rinzell and Moore project to be with the Hawks. And here's what he had to say.
Well, Pat, first off, I project both of these players to be in the Hawks opening night lineup next season. In fact, I'll take it a step further with a bold prediction. You're not going to see Sam Rinzell play a single game in the AHL. Both of these guys, by the nature of which they signed, are not going to be eligible for the AHL playoffs this spring in Rockford. And so you could see Rinzell continue that all the way forward. This is a guy who's a dynamic player who can skate like the wind, and beyond that, the biggest strength that he has is that he never seems to be rattled. He is a top pair NHL defenseman, is what he projects out to be. I think he's a coin flip right now between who is the brightest star in the Hawks system, whether it's Lev Shunov or Rinzell. He gives the Hawks tons of options moving forward. And when it comes to Oliver Moore, as Tony just mentioned, he's a guy that has speed to burn. He's someone that can certainly be a disruptor on the forecheck and bring that energy that the Hawks need. He could win a third line role job out of camp next season as well. So someone that when you think about the Hawks and where this has been trending all season long, I've been saying just be patient, because the biggest thing that the Hawks have to offer in their system is what's on the way, not necessarily what you can see tangibly in front of you, which is what getting these guys into a Hawks uniform today is. An incredibly exciting day to be a Hawks fan.
So high praise from Cervalli. How about him saying Rinzell will never play a game in Rockford?
I think that's true. I think it's true. Like you said, he's never rattled. He always looks comfortable. He can certainly skate at this level. He has the offensive skill set at this level. He is 6'5". So I kind of like that he's not eligible for Rockford. Get him straight into the strength program here. Get his body a little. He's still got some filling out to do. And he's going to be ready. And you see this, as long as you can skate, you know, the old trend in the NHL was like you kind of need 200 professional games, meaning in Rockford, before you're ready. And we even saw that with Vlasic. Like, not everybody is on the same development path. Rinzell looks – it's one game, but it's like his tools project. He doesn't matter what the level is. He's always going to be one of the best pure skaters on the ice, whether that's USHL or college or the NHL. He can skate at an elite level. And that translates, and you're seeing it across the league where it's, you know, if it's Brock Faber or it's Lane Hutson in Montreal, who's he's almost like a figure skater. He's a beautiful player to watch. And Rinzell does a lot of those things at 6'5". So in the way that he was popping in, you know, for scoring chances on the one you mentioned, he had another one shooting down at the West End where he kind of got in the slot like early in the game. It does not look too big for him. And if he is, you know, that projected top pair, and then you have Lev Shunov and you have Vlasic, and it's like, oh my God, like you're cooking, like you're kind of ready to go.
So tonight it's going to be Vlasic and Rinzell together. Korchinski's going to be a healthy scratch. We talked about last week and week prior how impressive Levshinov has been since he has come up. This is really going to be a competitive decor. And that's what I like when I finally see these players, you know, in the dressing room and out on the practice sheet and playing in these games, is it's upping the compete level within the organization. No longer can you have, you know, like the Mackenzie Entwistle who could have four bad games in a row and never get pulled out of the lineup or miss a shift because they were so talent depleted. Yeah. They had nobody to take his spot. Now, if you're Kevin Korchinski, you're a first round pick. If you're not one of the top six, you're going to sit tonight and Del Mastro is going to play in place of you. So I love how the internal competition has been ratcheted up with these like 14 guys that are now in the mix that are 23 and under.
Yeah, it's a tough situation for Korchinski, especially because, you know, he's drafted as a skater and really this offensive dynamic player who's going to run your power play. It's hard to imagine him ever getting power play minutes with Levshinov and Renzel on the team because they're both ahead of him when it comes to power play minutes. So if your best attribute is your offense and you're even in just that category, you're behind two guys that were drafted after you, either in the same year or the following years, it's like, where does he fit in? And that's something that Kyle Davidson is going to have to look at this summer. Because, you know, they need to improve the forwards. We all know that. And it's like, are you so deep on defense? Because even if, let's say, oh, we want to have just an awesome top six, and maybe Korchinski fits into that. Well, is it better to have that? Or are you good enough with, you know, we'll call him, it sounds like an insult, but it's not, like, but replacement level players in the third pair, like Del Mastro or Kaiser, whoever you fit in that role. It feels like they'd be probably better off with some defensive-minded guys in that third pair who can kill penalties and do some things that Korchinski can't. So I feel like he's not even – what is he, 21? Not even?
No, Korchinski's 20.
20? It's like he's 20 and his days might be numbered here because they've drafted and developed so well. But and it's a tough break for him. I think he's going to be a good player. Like he has considerable skills, but it's just I don't know where that guy fits in, which is a wonderful problem to have.
When you're pegged as a one-dimensional type of defenseman, whether that being defensive-minded or offensive-minded like Korchinski is, you better be damn good at that one skill set. I mean, you better be off the charts to make up for your, you know, your lack of physicality and able to clear the front of the net and things that you expect to see from bigger defensemen, especially when you go deeper in the playoffs. So it seems crazy that, you know, at age 20, we're talking about, but I mean, that's kind of the embarrassment of riches they have right now on the blue line. Well, and we haven't even talked about, you know, when we get to the draft, if Matthew Schaefer, the defenseman who everybody likes as a top one or two pick overall, if he's available, do you add him to the mix? And then again, that makes.
I think you do.
I think you do too.
Because he's a left shot, and Renzel and Lev are obviously on the right side. So that's the one thing that Korchinski, you know, from a balance standpoint, does have going for him. That if he can get into, you know, where he's good enough defensively, be in that second pair with somebody, he is the left shot. So it'd be Vlasic and then him on the left side in the top four. But it's really not even a commentary on Korchinski or what his future is. Like you're saying, he better be damn good if that's his one dimension. It's just that the other two guys are probably better at that one dimension, and there will always be room for a guy with Korchinski's skill set, but it might end up being something like he's a luxury player on a team that has a rock solid top four. You can have a long career being Erik Gustafsson, where it seems like Erik Gustafsson gets traded just about every deadline is what it feels like. You know, yeah, we'll give a fourth. He'll help our power play. And inevitably, he kind of does. Like, he has had success doing that in a lot of places for all his warts. But, and maybe that is just what Korchinski's future is, where he's a, you know, 10, 12-year pro, but never really a top four guy. And it's hard to imagine him being a top power play guy here just because of what we have, which is gets me all warm and fuzzy and tingly inside. So it is something. But Schaefer, you know, he is kind of that two-way guy where he'll lay the body on you, and you know, then it's just like, oh my God, like that blue line is just unstoppable.
312-332-3776 is the number to get a hold of us. Your thoughts on the debut of Sam Renzel over the weekend, or Oliver Moore for that matter? And is this rebuild starting to take some shape? Are you starting to see what the future looks like for this Blackhawks team? What did you think of Oliver Moore's debut? His speed tonight, for example, the third line is Landon Slaggart, Oliver Moore, and Lucas Reichel. That is speed for days, Chief.
Get in on the forecheck. This is almost like you don't know what those guys are going to be yet, and you kind of want to make it simple on these young guys. Just dump it in and go get it. Don't worry about making plays. Just put it in the opposite corner, turn the jets on, get in and get on the body, and you know, make plays once you reestablish it. But just keep it simple and use your best thing, which is that speed. And that, you're right, that line on paper, they should be able to forecheck like there's no tomorrow. So I hope we see some of that. And I do think that that's what Moore is going to be. I think he's going to be a winger who's going to be an animal on the forecheck. He's a pretty competitive kid too. If he gives you some offense, he has the tools. We'll see what happens to be an effective penalty killer. Like the guys that are coming up, they are exciting. And Nazar, obviously, with his speed too. I love the way that he competes and the way he back checks. You know, we've seen him, you know, he gets, I don't have any numbers on this, but just watching, it's like he has a breakaway every game because he just blows the doors off people.
You ask for some numbers. He's first on the Blackhawks at 0.73 rush attempts per 60 minutes, 5-on-5. So nearly one rush attempt per 60 minutes. Translation, one breakaway per game. And most nights we're seeing him with multiple breakaway opportunities. And if he was able to finish, half of those, he'd probably have six or seven more goals.
And I think that some of that will come too, because, you know, he's almost like the guy Gonzalez right now in Mighty Ducks 2, where he just flies around. He's the fastest guy ever. He can't stop, can't finish. But I think that he does have skill. And imagine next year and the years going forward where he's going to have Sam Renzel whipping around behind the net, picking up the puck, pick his head up and hit him in stride. Like those numbers probably only go up from here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So get your thoughts, 312-332-3776. Maybe you're heading to the game late. Again, it's a TNT game. It's a puck drop just before 9 o'clock. Give us your thoughts on what you've seen from the youth movement in the last couple of weeks. There's also talk about, you know, some coaches that could be available this coaching cycle. We'll get into that as well. We are presented by Four Winds Casino and sponsored by Chevy Drive Chicago and Nancy's Pizza. We also have Four Winds Casino giving away $200 gift card. Be caller 5 to win now. You must be 21 or older and must live in Illinois, Indiana, or Michigan. Four Winds Casino, $200 gift card. Be caller 5 to win now. And we will have more on the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000 after this. Rolling on the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. Congratulations to Jeremy in Maryville. He was the winner of that $200 gift card to Four Winds Casino. Chief, I understand we got some callers on the line.
Yeah, let's go to our old guy Tom in New Jersey.
What's up, Tom?
Hey, boys. Happy Wednesday. I missed you the last couple weeks, but great show as always. I did want to follow up. A couple weeks ago, I called, asked you for an assessment on Stan Bowman. Chief, you were very gracious with an F-. Pat, you were very diplomatic without even giving him a grade. And I promise, a New Year's resolution, I will not mention the name Stan Bowman tonight or on any other future calls.
Love it.
On that same call, you guys were talking about the possibility of Jonathan Toews making a comeback, not necessarily with the Hawks, but, you know, I was lucky enough to meet him in New Jersey years ago. He is the ultimate professional. He could not have been more courteous. He actually taught me how to take a selfie with him. And he's probably one of my three all-time favorite Blackhawks. I hope he's able to come back. I would love to see him as a Hawk. And this leads into an area that you guys have preached, that the Hawks have to do the little things. And when you look at Jonathan Toews' all-time performance in faceoffs, he was one of the all-time leaders in the NHL. The Hawks still struggle on faceoffs. I think Bedard is getting better. I wanted to ask you guys, is that something that it's like shooting free throws in basketball? You just constant repetition? And would somebody like Toews be able to help some of the younger guys? And when you talk about culture, which is another common theme for you guys, who better to build a culture around than a guy like Toews? I'm not asking him to play 10 or 15 minutes. Go in and just be a leader in the locker room. Help some of the younger guys develop. And we didn't do it with Kane. Why not give him a chance? Let's build a culture and let's work on little things like faceoffs. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. I love the passion for Jonathan Toews. I love him too. One of my all-time favorite athletes. He can't really help this team. He can't play well enough. He needs to be a passenger. I don't think you can take 3 years off or whatever it's been now and then come back in and be a leader anywhere. I hope he finds his way back to the NHL, but he's going to have to kind of do what Joe Thornton did and be a journeyman and you know, take the fourth line minutes, if anything. So he doesn't fit here anymore. He can't skate the way we talked about the speed the last segment. He can't keep up with this group. And we got Yannick Perreault to teach him faceoffs.
Yannick Perreault's, you know, historically one of the best faceoff men in the history of the league. He's been with the organization for over a decade now. So he helped Toews and others. And there has been some improvement from Bedard at the faceoff circle. I think a lot of that is strength. I think a lot of it is technique. I don't think it helps that he has such a whippy stick and that he's in there against guys that don't have whippy sticks, to say the least. And then I think Frank Nazar has made a really solid improvement at the faceoff dot. So I like that. Culture-wise, I think, you know, you're hearing Nick Foligno talk about it, you know, weeding out the players that aren't on board with the rebuild and are a detriment to the rebuild. And you could say Seth Jones was that, you know, Peter Mrazek was not, but with the addition of Spencer Knight, he became expendable. They said goodbye to Craig Smith. That was just, you know, Detroit's desire to have another player. And, you know, Taylor Hall, like that, he wasn't happy. So they've moved on. And I will say this, Chief, the other night, Kerfoot took a two-hand slash to Alex Vlasic. And it looked like Vlasic left the game for a while, came back shortly thereafter, but it looked like it could have been bad. And there was no response on the ice from which is primarily a young Blackhawks team. I mean, they've got Murphy, they've got Maroon, and they've got Foligno as kind of the guys that are going to police teams that are taking liberties with some of their star players. And Maroon's going to be gone at the end of this season, and it's going to be down to Murphy and Foligno. And I'm wondering, from this young mix of players, you know, who's going to emerge with that type of role that they add to their resume? Because you're going to need that, or you're going to need to add a piece this offseason, because you can't have what I saw from Alex Kerfoot taking a two-hand chop on Alex Vlasic.
Yeah, I think this is where it goes back to, like, how are you building out this forward group, and what kind of guys do you want? And that's where it's like, you love to see a guy like Sam Bennett sign here. You love to, you know, everyone fantasizes about making a big, bold move for a guy like Brady Tkachuk. If he tells the Sens, like, hey, I'm not signing at the end of my deal, can we get something done this summer? because you need the guys who can play and fight and set the culture and do all that and not let these teams bully a young Blackhawks team, because there just isn't, because you want guys to be themselves too. Like, you don't want a guy like, you know, Vlasic, if that's just not in his arsenal. Like, he's never been asked to be that guy. It's like, hey, you're 25 years old. You're going to have to start fighting guys, even though you're our number one defenseman. That doesn't seem right either. So you're going to have to fill out that, you know, that toughness to your team. And it can be a team thing. And it doesn't have to be fighting, but it can be like, hey, like, that guy's going to have a long night. If he's going to play like that, we're going to finish everything. He's going to get all the extra wax. He's going to get the little cross checks in the, you know, in the small of the back. And just make him think twice about it going forward. Like, you can be, you know, those great Blackhawks teams, like, they had guys that would do it, but they were not, you know, teams tried to bully them all the time. The famous Kessler, no team can withstand this many hits. And they had Perry and Getzlaf, and, you know, they had Pat Maroon. And it's just, there's more than one way to be tough, but you do have to respond one way or another when guys are taking liberties against your team.
All right, if the Blackhawks are going to have a coaching search at the end of this season, Anders Sorensen will be a part of the search as well, or the process of deciding on who will be the next coach of this team going forward. One of the most intriguing names is David Carl, the head coach at University of Denver. He is only 35 years old, but he's won a national championship, has him back in the Frozen Four again. Give me a list of some of the candidates you would like to see Kyle Davidson consider for being the next head coach of the Blackhawks.
Well, let me ask you a question first. Do you like the idea of having a guy with this group in particular, knowing how young it is? Because I think you can frame it as a positive or as a detriment to have a young head coach. Do you think it's a good idea to have a first-time NHL head coach who's in his 30s coaching this team next year?
I do, if his name's David Carl. I think he's one of one in my book. And the reason why I give him a pass on not being an NHL coach is because of his success at the collegiate level. So he can identify with the young player. He's obviously been able to recruit. So he has that component that he can work with Kyle to discuss the type of player they think they need to go out and get or acquire or draft. And the fact that he's had success at the international level with two gold medals for the U.S.
Yeah.
And he's got some familiarity with some of the players that have played for him. To me, he'd be the only coach that I would consider without NHL experience. Otherwise, I would go the NHL experience route.
Okay, so last week we kind of played a game where we let ourselves fantasize about Mitch Marner and Sam Bennett, et cetera. We could do that with the coaches too. So I'm going to give you option A and option B. Option A is Carl. Option B is Pittsburgh moves on from Mike Sullivan.
Wow.
Who would you rather have?
See, that's a tough one because Sullivan's at the top of my list if he gets let go.
Yeah, same with me.
Okay, so, you know, and I've done a little bit of digging. I want to touch base with some people that have strong ties to Pittsburgh to find out, you know, why is it just the shelf life has expired? Like, why moving on from him? I think his resume is tremendous. I think he's had success. I think he's the product right now of a team that's, you know, doesn't know how to hold on to their aging veterans and retool the rest of the roster.
Right. They haven't been able to execute what Washington is.
Right.
You know, so, which is unfortunate. It's a sad way to see Sid kind of end his career, because he, to me, is the best. But I would have Mike Sullivan. Now, another fantasy kind of name, which I think is possible. What if Colorado gets bounced in the first round and they, you know, and they just decide, hey, Jared Bednar, thanks for the memories. Would you rather have Bednar or would you rather have David Carl?
Well, we're going to Denver for both of them.
Yeah.
I like Bednar a lot.
So do I.
I liked him when he was getting some heat and Denver were, and the Colorado Avalanche were considering moving on from him. just in my interaction with him when he came into town at the United Center, to me, I'm big on how you connect to your players in that room. And that's one thing I've seen Carl do. I think he, you know, the behind the scenes stuff I saw with the Team USA, I was overly impressed how he held the command of that room. If it was between those two, I'd probably side with David Carl, because I like the fact that he's a young coach who has had experience and success with young players. And right now, that's where we're at in this rebuild. Young players that need to be developed. Who better than him, who's done it at the collegiate level and done it for Team USA?
Strong points. I think I would still take Bednar in that situation, because if you look at what he did, he took over that team when they were in the depths of a rebuild. So they had kind of torn it down with Duchesne. They had McKinnon, but he hadn't really popped off yet. You know, McCarr was drafted, but, you know, not there yet. They were horrible when he got that job. I think they had one of the lowest points. They finished with like 60 points, I think, one year. I think they finished dead last his first year as an NHL head coach. So he was able to take a team that was going through a similar process to what the Blackhawks are now and take it all the way up the mountain. And I do think coaches everywhere have a shelf life. So if they decide, hey, this is the time we need to shake things up a little bit after losing the first round, because their thing is that they've just never been able to, I think, replace Kadri and some of those other veterans who added some of that grit, that I think Bednar could be, resume-wise, maybe the best possible guy, even better than Mike Sullivan.
Wow. Okay. I think they're the best, one of the best teams in the West.
Yeah.
And I think they got much better at the trade deadline and went from being top heavy to, I think, now one of the deeper teams in the league. Yeah. And
but
we're going to see
likely going to draw Dallas, which.
Yeah. Which, again, and let's get into that on the other side, because okay. You put out a tweet this week that you love the divisional format. You love the fact that, you know,
I am the only one is how it
you
feels.
Are the only one. So you're going to die on that mountain. We'll discuss that. And I want to, since we're taking on Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar on this night on the West side, who's the dynamic duo that you would pick right now in the National Hockey League? It could be two forwards, forward and a D, whatever the your dealer's
on the same,
choice.
On the same team?
On the same team.
Okay.
Okay. That's coming up next. It's the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. Rolling on the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Four Winds Casino. Blackhawks in action at the United Center tonight. They are taking on the Colorado Avalanche. With Barstool Chief, I am Pat Boyle. Want to head to the phones, Chief?
Yeah, let's take Elliot in Elgin.
What's up, Elliot?
Hey, great show, guys.
Thanks, Elliot. What's going on?
I'm just going to make this really short here. Why is it so important to fast-track Renzel, given the fact that they really haven't done that with any of the other defensemen? What sets him apart? Thank you.
He does have more college hockey underneath his belt, so more than Levchinov. But I think his tools just suggest he's ready. So there are – and there, his tools and his skills, where it's like some guys are just – and we're seeing it with Levchinov. Levchinov's better at the NHL level than he was showing in Rockford. So some guys need to be playing with better players to really push their development and take advantage of their skills. And I think Renzel fits that category.
I have heard Renzel could impact the Hawks like – Brock Faber has the Wild. Do you think there's similarities between those two?
Yeah, except for our guy's 6'5".
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, and it's not just like a Blackhawks thing. I think he's so good that if the, you know, some alternate universe, let's say that, you know, he was drafted by St. Louis, he'd probably be on that team heading into the playoffs too. So he's just a very talented guy. That you kind of just be like, he's too good for the AHL. Some guys are just that good. He seems to be one of them.
All right. You mentioned the Blues. Have you been surprised with their turnaround?
Yeah. I'm disgusted by it.
It's like since the Four Nations break, they have the best record in the National Hockey League.
And they got Jobu in the locker room from Major League. It's given me PTSD flashbacks to 19, where they call up Binnington, they make the coaching change, around New Year's Day. They're the worst team in the league. And then it's like, oh, we got this stupid song from the 80s, Gloria. My old coworker YP had some chinchilla rat. And all of a sudden, like, the vibes were through the roof and they somehow win a cup. Like, I cannot have the Blues getting two cups in a Blackhawks time where they can't get out of the basement. So this whole thing with Jim Montgomery and whatever's going on in St. Louis, they need to turn into a pumpkin real fast or I'm going to have a long spring.
And I don't know if this ever happened in NHL history, but to get fired as a head coach the same year you win Coach of the Year, I doubt that's ever happened. But
probably not.
Jim Montgomery's at least going to be up for it.
I remember Joe
done.
Thornton won the Hart Trophy after getting traded by Boston. I think that would probably be the closest comp for a major award after changing teams mid-year. But yeah, wild run that they're on. I am sick about it because last night I was watching it. It was Kaner, Red Wings. I didn't want to be watching that game. It was a terrible, boring game. And it's just like, all right, well, maybe the ends tonight. The Wings need this game desperately. No, Blues get the result in OT. And it's just, it makes me sick.
All right, let's get to your thoughts on the playoff format that's currently in the NHL. The thought is by making the 2 and the 3 seed in each division square off, that it's going to create this rivalry that is going to be lasting. I say let the rivalries happen organically. Wouldn't you want the Lightning and the Florida Panthers to meet later on down the road and have an epic battle in the Eastern Conference Finals, or the Dallas Stars and Colorado Avalanche, rather than having one of the favorites of to win the Stanley Cup bounced in the first round? Let's see them play it out. And if it's going to be a rivalry, to me, it's more significant when you play later on when you get closer to the Cup.
While that can be all well and true, I want to see Florida against Tampa. I have enjoyed that rivalry. I've enjoyed it in the playoffs. I've historically loved Boston and Toronto in the playoffs. I want to see those matchups, and the best way to guarantee that they happen is to have them play, early through like a divisional playoff, because there's no guarantee you're going to get Tampa Bay against Florida, which will be awesome in the conference final. They're just as likely to get bounced at some other stage. So I want to see the rivalries. I want to see those matchups, and I'd rather get them than not get them. So I'm trying to increase my odds. It's almost like you're counting cards in a way to get them. So just make sure you have a format that allows you to get these matchups you want to see. Like, I want to see Toronto and Ottawa. That would be awesome. That, remember 20 years ago, Pat, when it was, those old Sens teams with Heatley and Alfredson, they had some battles with Toronto. That was a great rivalry. I would love to see that matchup in the first round. And it would be a shame if, we didn't get it. So I'd rather have it than not. I actually just kind of hate the wild card system, too. It made sense when we had an odd number of teams. Now we got 8 teams in every division, 32 teams, perfect, alignment. Give me the top 4 in each, and let's just hammer it out. And there's plenty of division banners flying in Chicago. Like, let's have a little bit more of that.
All right, what was the greatest rivalry during the Cup run for the Blackhawks?
Okay, that's entrapment. Okay. So it was obviously Vancouver and the
Hawks.
Yes,
obviously.
And then probably number 2 would be the Kings and the Hawks, and then 3 might have been the Ducks and the Hawks. And that but like we did also in those runs, we had some great series with the Preds, we had some great series with the Blues. But yeah, the blood ran hot in that Vancouver, and it was awesome, and you're right. But that also happened in the second round. The first and the second round each time. So it didn't have to get to the conference finals. It did kind of work out that way. But I do think, familiarity breeds contempt, or whatever that expression is. So if you can fix a system to have those matchups happen more often, you tell me you weren't excited, in the last several years when it's like, we got Boston and Toronto again. How's Toronto going to fall on their face here again? I mean, it was, you see those people – in Maple Leaf Square, and Patrice Bergeron just rips their heart out every year, and you watch them like die on camera. And I looked forward to that every single year.
By
Never
the way,
got old.
If they went back to the 1-8-2-7 format, mm-hmm. the Lightning and Florida Panthers would play each other in the first round because they're the 4 and the 5 seed. So
okay.
You would see it.
Sometimes it works
sometimes
out.
It works out.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, you know what I do have an issue with?
Mm.
The way the NCAA handles their hockey tournament.
Yeah. What's the issue?
I think that the first round games should be you've got 16 seeds, right?
Mm-hmm.
The top 8 seeds should host the first round matchup and give them
Well, you don't like the games in an empty building in Bridgeport, Connecticut, or Manchester,
right.
New Hampshire?
Right. And I didn't like that the Penn State Nittany Lions were like the 12th seed and they got put into Allentown,
yeah.
Pennsylvania, home which game. Was basically a home game. And they won their first two games, and they're on to the Frozen Four. So
it sounds
like
sour grapes from a Michigan State alum.
Well, it could be. It could be. But I would rather see the top 8 seeds, you know, rewarded for their great regular season and not play in these empty buildings that don't have any juice in them that are, you know, 4 hours or 5 hours away from campus. Why not put them, you know, give those barns an opportunity to show their excitement for the sport. And then in the lead 8, I would have them all meet in a like an NHL arena. And then the Frozen Four would still be at its own destination.
Pat, I completely agree with you. And I love college hockey. And one of the things that makes college hockey great is the crowd. So whether it's UNH and, you know, they have all their pregame stuff and they're throwing fish on the ice, or, you know, the Badgers with, you know, I don't know if you've ever been to a game in Madison, Kohl Center. That place, when they're good and they have 15,000 people in the marching band, or North Dakota, like the crowd is such, it's almost like a soccer, international soccer environment where like they chant and sing and you know, you do have the band. The atmospheres are spectacular. And then you have your theoretically your biggest stage where you're actually on national TV. And it's just like, well, this stinks. Like, who even cares about this? So I'm completely with you. I don't know. It's almost like you need to elongate the tournament and make it 3 weekends instead of doing the first, you know. So because I think the higher seed should just host until the Frozen Four. So it's like you play one game and then on a Friday or a Saturday, then you do the same thing the next weekend. And as opposed to, you know, traveling for the second round to an NHL site, because then the travel gets a little wonky.
Well, here's the thing. They got 12 days off between games.
That's stupid, too. Yeah. And that's been that way as long as I can remember.
I know. And I don't like that at all. So
I think that they, you know, they're in a weird spot where it's like they have to play to their audience. Like, they're never going to compete with March Madness.
No.
So,
there's plenty of room to work around the Final Four.
Exactly.
They're playing Saturday, Monday, play Friday, Sunday.
Problem solved. So the Frozen Four should be Friday, Sunday. I completely agree. And then I would have the first two rounds spread out over 2 weekends, and the higher seed hosts both games.
All right, we got to take one last break here on the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. Back to wrap things up after this. Back on the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Four Winds Casino. Thanks to our sponsors, Chevy Drive Chicago and Nancy's Pizza. Thanks to our producer, Justin Pottinger and Hannah LaMotta. A programming note, this show will be on next week, Monday, April 7th at 8 o'clock. Got to move that because of a White Sox game next week. And the Blackhawks are already underway with the Colorado Avalanche. Just a couple minutes into that one, Alex Ovechkin held to 1 goal in Carolina tonight. So now he's 3 away from breaking Gretzky's record. Does he get it on Friday against the beloved Blackhawks?
No, I can't sit here and be like he's going to have a hat trick to end it. So we'll stretch it out a little bit. He's getting it this year. How many games he got left? 9? 8?
I think 8.
Yeah, so I think he'll get it this year. At least I hope he does. And then, you know, I feel like somehow nobody really talks about them as a potential contender, even though they're, you know, in the President's Trophy race. So them and Winnipeg.
It is weird, isn't it?
Yeah, so both the top two records in the league, everyone just kind of is like, it'll probably be Dallas or Colorado or Florida or anybody else besides the top two teams. But I also agree with those people.
One thing we didn't touch on is the goaltending slump that we've seen from the Hawks lately. Spencer Knight, in his first four starts, allowed three or fewer goals, had a .928 save percentage. In his last five starts, he's allowed four more goals in four of those starts with an .847 save percentage. Are you concerned at all?
I am not concerned. He's the guy. He's got all the talent. Look, this is a terrible team. They give up, you know, high quality chances. So even that first game where it's like, oh my goodness, he had 41 stops or whatever, he was standing on his head. Like, that wasn't going to continue on forever. So you could put, you know, Patrick Waugh, Marty Brodeur, Hasek in there. They're going to struggle with this team in front of them. So I'm not worried about it.
What's your prediction tonight? The Hawks have beaten the Colorado Avalanche twice this season. The Avs got in their last meeting back in March. Who wins the fourth and final meeting tonight?
I think the Avs they're humming now. I think the Avs, they get it. They're on a playoff push. The Hawks are young and fun, and that's an okay place to be too, though.
I think Grinzel's going to get his first marker in the National Hockey League.
I love it. I might go put that in right now.
And Colorado just scored to make it 1-0. Yeah. That's going to do it for the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. Yeah. For Barstool Chief, I'm Pat Boyle. We will catch you next Monday.